You're listening to Between the Stripes LOI podcast, sponsored by flowmax.ie and bar1racing.com. Be sure to subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or any of your favourite podcast outlets. Now here are your hosts, Kieran Burke and Jonathan Breyer.
Hello everyone and welcome to Between the Stripes LOI podcast. It's our FAI Cup Final special. It's always our most popular show of the year and I'm sure this year it's going to be no different. We've got three interviews to bring you tonight. We're going to hear from Dundalk coach Shane Keegan. We'll hear from a 2002 FAI Cup winner with the town, that's John Flanagan. And we'll hear from Rovers legend Pat Flynn as well. But I'm delighted to have two co-hosts with me for the first time ever on an FAI Cup Final special here on BTS. I've got Gary Riley as ever, and I'm delighted to say James Rogers joins me now. And we're recording this one quite late, lads. It's just after the Malda Dundalk game. So James, I'll go to you first. You've just been at the UEFA press conference, obviously over Zoom, the times we're in. What was the reaction from the Dundalk camp after that defeat tonight?
Yeah, I suppose a bit of disappointment. You know, I think they set up with a game plan to try and play on the counter-attack. And, you know, thin lines at this level where, you know, maybe there was a chance just before the first Molde goal where Daniel Kelly had a chance to play Nathan Adua in and it was slightly overhit. And, you know, a different night, you take that chance, it's maybe a different game. Obviously, listen, Molde were the better team. And I think the disappointing thing from the Dundalk's perspective is that the three goals were, you know, all from crosses and all from basically free headers. So, you know, that would be a concern. And it's sort of a continuing theme with Dundalk in Europe. If it's not individual errors, it's sort of like the basics that you'd expect them to be better at.
I actually just tweeted that after the game, Gary, one thing you wouldn't expect from an Irish team in Europe is to concede three goals through headers. It's obviously something we're quite strong at as a footballing country. We're quite good in the air. That wasn't the case with Dundalk tonight. And as James said, it's been a bit of an issue all season. Is that a big concern going into the cup final on Sunday?
It probably was just a bit more exposed. The gulf in class between the two teams was just exposed a bit more, and you could see it a bit more with the crosses that were going in were better quality crosses.
Yeah.
With better positioned players, knowing, having a better understanding of their colleague on the pitch where they're going to put it and where the colleague was able to put it. So, look, it was three-headed goals. You would be, of course, disappointed. You'd be sick, actually, looking at it. But sure, look, Malta were a far better team on the night, and I don't think Dundalk offered very much. Brilliant goal from Flores, though, all the same. But it's a nice, put a bit of a happier twinge on the game.
James, as I said, you were at the press conference after the game. Was there any team news given in terms of has everyone come out of the game okay tonight?
Yeah, slight concern about Daniel Kelly. Had a minor knock, but the one that they were more concerned about with him was probably his eye. He took a bit of a blow early on, but I'd imagine he'd be okay. The team's not actually flying back till Friday morning. Traditionally, they'd fly back the night of the game. But I suppose with the final in mind, they're getting a good night's sleep and coming back tomorrow. So I suppose at least they're coming back. And, you know, we've all been on planes. As much as you try, it's very hard to get comfortable and get a good night's sleep on them. So they'll get their sleep in today, and at least they're coming back at a sort of reasonable hour tomorrow.
Yeah, obviously the issue there is, though, they're only going to get one training session really before the cup final. So before I talk to you about preparation, what we might do now, we'll break and actually we'll hear from Shane Keegan. I spoke to him earlier in the week before they flew to Norway, but he flagged up some of the issues the team is going to face in terms of preparation with only one training session to go ahead of that FAI Cup final on Sunday. Now, I'm delighted to say I am joined on the line by Shane Keegan from the Dundalk FC coaching staff, and he's going to speak to us ahead of this weekend's FAI Cup final against Shamrock Rovers. Shane, thanks for speaking to us today.
No bother at all, Kieran.
Busy couple of days for yourself, Shane. Obviously, you were in Athlone last night. Fantastic win, record-breaking win. You've been in today to get the old COVID test and done ahead of your trip to Norway, so that's coming up on Thursday, obviously. Then you've got the cup final on Sunday, and then you've got Arsenal to look forward to a week later, next Thursday, in the Europa League as well. So a really busy end to the season.
Yeah, look, it's kind of been that busy pretty much non-stop for the last 3 months, I suppose, Kieran, really, bar the bit of a break we had heading into the quarter-final against Bohemians. That's pretty much the only time almost since we came back from lockdown, where we haven't been playing every 3 to 4 days. So it's been hectic, and it's going to finish off with a hectic period as well, that's for sure, yeah.
Yeah, and I suppose squad rotation will be something on people's lips this week. Obviously, it's something that you've had to do as a coach and staff a lot this season with the Thursday night games and then league games and cup games. Is there a feeling that there might be maybe a marriage of the two on Thursday? Because I know Filippo last night in his interview, he mentioned that the cup is probably more important, but I'm sure there's a lot of rewards in terms of Europe as well. You got the job done very early in Athlone last night, so might there be a marriage of rotating but getting a strong team out there at the same time on Thursday night?
Well, that's it, yeah. That's exactly the balance that you're trying to strike, all right, so it is, Kieran. And look, to be honest with you, like, because of the strength of depth of the squad, which is, you know, very, very good, in fairness, there's almost there's pretty much two high-standard players for every position. I think that side of it has been less the problem. The problem has been preparation time. Simple as that. The turnaround times in between games is incredibly short. Like you take this week, for example, and put yourself in the shoes of the manager or the coach. So we played last night. Thankfully, looked went very, very well. So we pretty much can't do anything today, only get COVID tested. Tomorrow we're flying, and you have to go into 24-hour lockdown when we get there, so there'll be no training tomorrow, and then you will have one training session on Wednesday. Is your total preparation, on-field preparation, heading into a massive game on Thursday. We will then fly on Friday, obviously won't train on Friday, and then we'll get together on Saturday, which is technically only game day plus two, which is a day that you're not really supposed to be training really either. We will have no choice, and we will have one training session to prepare for Shamrock Rovers. So the rotation personnel is less the problem because there's such quality there. It's the lack of preparation time today is a massively, massively challenging part of it all for everybody. But it is what it is. You just have to get on with it, you know?
Yeah, I suppose this has shades of 2016 for Dundalk about it. They came back from Russia, from Zenit, and 2 days later they had the FAI Cup final against Cork. And obviously, you're not going as far as Russia this time, thankfully. But still, as you said, there's quite a taxing couple of days for Dundalk. Are you disappointed maybe that wasn't taken into account when the FAI Cup was scheduled, that Dundalk would have been playing a game in the Europa League a couple of days beforehand? I know there was always the possibility Dundalk mightn't reach the Cup final, but is it something that maybe should have been factored in?
Yeah, well, look, I mean, all I can do is approach that question from Dundalk's point of view, and obviously from Dundalk's point of view, yeah, it is very, very disappointing. To have the showpiece occasion of Irish football, where one of the teams heading into it has one training session to prepare for it, I mean, to me, that's not right. I don't have the solution as to what they should have done. You know, is it as easy as just pushing it out another week? Well, to us it is, but I'm sure the FAI would have reasons as to why that can't happen, and I'm sure Shamrock Rovers would have fought hard not to allow that happen. But yeah, to me it is a crazy situation that a club has one training session heading into, as I say, the biggest game in the calendar domestically, you know.
Yeah, and just on yourself, Shane, obviously you came in as a video analyst this year at Dundalk early on in the year, and I think it's fair to say your role has probably taken on a lot more in recent weeks with the change in management. You've been on the sideline as well due to licensing commitments for the European games. How have you coped with it all?
Yeah, look, I've enjoyed it, so I can't say anything else. Vinny brought me in a very, very specific role. Vinny had a wealth of League of Ireland knowledge surrounding him in initially Rory Higgins and consistently John Gill and then latterly Alan Reynolds as well. So, you know, it was a very specific role for me, and I was happy to take on that role and do exactly that role. When the shake-up came, then obviously it's a very, very different situation for Filippo and Giuseppe, where they don't have that base level of knowledge or those people around them. So it just quite simply required a hell of a lot more for me, and obviously the licensing thing obviously feeds into it as well, but it just meant they required an awful lot more for me as a management team than was needed previously. And look, you know, as with anybody who's kind of enjoys their work or ambitious in their work life, when you're given more involvement and you're given more to do and you're given more kind of more say in things, and that you're naturally enough, you do enjoy it and you do try and make sure that you step up to the mark. And basically for me it's been very, very straightforward. It's you know, what do you want from me, Filippo? Okay, that's what you want. Let me do everything I can to deliver that to you as best as I possibly can. So, yeah, look, I've really, really enjoyed it, you know.
Yeah, and as I said there, you've had to take up really the manager role on the sideline, at least during the games, for 90 minutes recently in the European games because of licensing issues. And there was a lot made of that on social media after the game the other night, that maybe you were thrown in there at short notice. Is it a bigger or is it a lesser inconvenience maybe than people make out? Because I'm sure an awful lot of the work goes in before the players even take to the grass.
100%, yeah, 100%. No, there's pretty much no difference in my role on say last Thursday night than there would be on any other night, really. You're executing, maybe it's your job to press button and execute some of the things that are being asked to be done, all right, but you know, there's only one man making all the decisions, and rightly so. Obviously he confers with me, and the more they confer with Giuseppe. But at the same time, he is very, very much the main man. We knew what he wanted, and it was up to us then just to try and relay those instructions out onto the pitch as much as we possibly could, you know.
Yeah, and look, obviously there's no better feeling than being a manager. I think even ex-players say this, that while they obviously really enjoy winning cups and trophies as a player, there's an even better feeling when you do that as a manager. And you've achieved that as a manager, and winning a league is probably the ultimate feeling because it's over a longer period of time and it's a real slog, and you did that with Wexford. But would this be right up there for you to be part of a coaching staff at such a massive club like Dundalk if you could go and win this FAI Cup on Sunday?
I mean, I remember sitting, what year, you'd be better doing the math on it for me, but I remember sitting in Geneva with Nick when I was Wexford manager, sitting in Geneva with Nick, because the women were in the final, Wexford Youth women were in the final, because Nick said we'd go up for the day and support the women and the whole lot, and it was a Cork Dundalk final, and it was just a fantastic occasion and the whole lot, and you're looking at the men's final, just looking at Tom Ellens in the women's final as well, and going, geez, what a great occasion for Tom as well. And you are saying to yourself, I want a bit of that. I want a piece of that over the next while. And I mean, let's be honest, 2015 at Wexford went very, very well for me as a manager, but the following two seasons didn't go fantastically well, so did it. So, you know, if and when I come back into management, it's going to be, you know, it's almost certainly going to be a first division medal, so it is. Mid-table, first division level, kind of a Wexford job all over again, maybe, or something like that. The chances of me seeing an FAI Cup final as a manager again are a long way away. You know, it takes quite a bit of time to rebuild reputation, get back there. So getting to do it in these circumstances, where you're part of the machine rather than head of the machine, it has been absolutely brilliant. And the other thing to bear in mind as well here is, you know, I came into initially the A Championship back when that existed as FC Carlo manager, but be it FC Carlo, Wexford, wherever I've been the manager, and I've never been a player at League of Ireland level. I've never been a coach at League of Ireland level up until this year. I've never been an assistant manager at League of Ireland level. Quite honestly, I've never had anybody to learn from, ever. I've never had anybody to learn from, and it's literally a case of taking it up as I go along and see how it works out for me as I go along. So this has been brilliant from that side of it. And you know, okay, nobody wishes the turnover of staff that we had this year, but from a selfish point of view, even that's been brilliant in that I've now got to see how, I've got to see how Vinnie Port works, I've got to see how Aaron Reynolds works, John Gill works, Rory Higgins works, Giuseppe works, Filippo works. I've got to experience a wealth of different managers and coaches over the course of this year. And in terms of my own career going forward, I think that's been hugely, hugely beneficial for me. So look, that's been a huge plus of it as well, you know.
Brilliant stuff, Shane. Look, final question before we go. Obviously, the cup final on Sunday. Filippo himself in the interview admitted yesterday Shamrock Rovers are going to be the favourites. They're going in as league champions, unbeaten league champions. So that's only natural, but where's this game going to be won and lost? It was a bit of a cagey affair last year. Obviously Dundalk got that late equaliser and people thought they might push on, and only for an amazing save from Alan Manis in extra time, they might have just taken that cup final last year. It went to penalties, didn't go their way. Is it going to be a similarly tight affair this year, do you think?
Yeah, I think it probably will here, and I'd be very, very surprised if either team managed to blow the other one out of the water, really, to be honest. obviously Rovers did so too in the last league game, but I think everybody understands that the side that we put out that night was significantly changed. I think at full strength, with us at as close to full strength as we can be, and them as close to full strength as they can be, I think there's very, very, very little between the two sides. I think Lebo said that, I think Peter Bradshaw said that too. But both sides at full whack, there's so little. But the one thing there is there's just an incredible amount of quality on the field, and a really incredible amount of quality on the field. Obviously, you know, you can go through the ball for them and the recent international call-ups that they've had. And you look at us in recent weeks, and Mickey Duffy is absolutely back on top form. Patrick McElhenney, I joked with him last night that he probably would have got about 30 points in fantasy football. He racked up so many assists and had such an impact on the game. So they're really coming back into their best form again. Even Shieldsley, probably by Shieldsley's high standards, his form even probably dipped a little bit. Whereas, I mean, since the first Rapid game, he has been back to his best, if not better, than ever. So there's going to be a huge amount of quality on the field. And I suppose in a game like that, it tends to be one of two things, you know, a slight margin of error where somebody makes a little slip up, or an extreme moment of brilliance. And look, obviously, we don't care what way it happens so long as we come out on the right side, but you would love to think that it's an extreme moment of brilliance that separates the two sides on Sunday and hopefully in our favour.
Yeah, look, hopefully it'll be a good spectacle for everyone watching at home. A shame that the Aviva isn't going to be absolutely hopping like it is every other year. But Shane, it's always great catching up with you. Thanks very much for speaking to us today. I know you've got an absolutely outrageous schedule over the next while, so we really appreciate you taking time out to speak with us.
Cheers, no bother at all.
For all your industrial equipment, compressed air, vacuum, automation, mechanical and engineering needs, check out flowmax.ie, proud sponsors of Between the Stripes LOI podcast. Yeah, so we've just heard from Shane Keegan there, James. How big of a disadvantage, or is it a disadvantage in your eyes, the fact that Dundalk will only get one training session? And obviously, look, you're a Dundalk reporter, but you're a big Dundalk fan as well. You've been there for the dark days and the good days. Would you agree with what Shane had to say there, that maybe Dundalk have every right to be disappointed? They haven't received more help from the FAI during the European run. And this has very much shades of 2016, about when Dundalk came back from Zenit and played a cup final 2 days later. And now they're coming back from Norway. Obviously, look, it's not the same type of trip, but it's still quite taxing, particularly in the current climate we're in. Players having to isolate, they're locked up in hotels, they can't really get out and about. And as I said, they'll only get on the grass once now before the cup final.
Yeah, look, it's not ideal. And I think above all years, there's probably less of a reasoning not to maybe stretch it out a little bit and give them that bit of leeway. Like in previous years, you could talk about maybe the Aviva being when it's available. I don't think that's as much of a factor this year with a lack of fans. But look, it is what it is. I think that, look, they've been here before. And I think, to be fair, if they can't get themselves up for that game, I don't think they ever will. You know, as much as they lost in 2016 coming back from Russia, I thought they were the better team that day. I remember Ronan Finn in particular was absolutely outstanding. Obviously, they just didn't have the finish and they got caught by a sucker punch at the end. But I think it's a game they'll be able to get themselves up for. And I don't think it's that much of an excuse. You look at the game tonight and some of the, I suppose, key players you'd look at didn't play a whole pile. Obviously, the likes of McElhenney, Duffy, McMillan come on late on. But They didn't have a taxing evening, shall we say. So I think, you know, in many ways, that's as good as a training session for them.
Yeah, and just going back to what we were discussing before we heard from Shane there, we were talking about the issues tonight in the air, particularly, and playing three at the back. And just looking at social media there after the game, a lot of supporters, they'd like to see that three at the back system binned, at least for this cup final, go back to the traditional 4-2-3-1 that I suppose all of Dundalk's success was built on under Stephen Kenny. There's a lot of talk about Sean Gannon in this team, particularly about his role. He seems to always flourish at the right fullback role as opposed to playing on the right wing back. What's your views? Do you think Filippo might go back to a traditional four, or is he likely to stick with this three at the back system for the cup final?
It's hard to know. I mean, it obviously worked very well against Bowes in the quarter final, but I personally think, you know, by playing that, you concede an awful lot in midfield, and obviously that's where Rovers can particularly hurt you. I think, you know, that's where their real strength is, and it obviously is something that the players they're not that used to. I mean, you look at tonight, like the three centre halves tonight, they're all very experienced, and yet there was almost a confusion at times of who's picking up who from,
yeah,
you know, just basic crosses into the box. Now, maybe you could argue that Shamrock Rovers might have the threat up front that, say, that Mulday would, but equally, you know, you take the likes of Pico Lopez, and he's a tremendous record against the Dock from corner kicks, etc. And when you have someone like Jack Byrne and Aaron McAniff, etc., putting the ball into the box, you know, you need that bit of understanding. So I think go back to basics, maybe, would it, whether he does that or not, but that'd be my preference. I'd certainly like to see them do that.
Gary, of course, that midfield battle is what everyone is flagging up ahead of the cup final on Sunday. But the big difference between 12 months ago and now could be the fact that Chris Shields is going to be available for this game. He was suspended last year. Jack Byrne had the run of the midfield. Graham Burke was very good on the day, and McAniff as well. There's loads of quality in that Shamrock Rovers midfield. But could the presence of Shields just slow down that Rovers flow?
It'll certainly slow it down. It'll certainly give them couple of extra things to think about. Like, Chris Shields has been a huge player for Dundalk this year, and it certainly had a huge impact on the final last year. So certainly the like a Byrne and McAniff will have more to contend with in the center of the park. So look, it's a huge boost for Dundalk to have Shields in there. Whether or not I really think that Rovers are going to do the double this year. And while Shields will be a stumbling block for Rovers, I still think they'll have enough to do it. So it'll certainly make it a more even game. You know, he's a captain, a huge presence on the field for the Dundalk team. So I think it'll make it more interesting in the middle of the park. Jack Byrne will have more to think about, but I'd still think they'll have enough.
Yeah, so Gary, very keen there. He reckons Rovers are going to do the double. Don't worry, Rovers fans, we're going to be hearing from Pat Flynn very shortly on the show. We'll get his prediction for Sunday's Cup final. But James, I suppose there's a lot of uncertainty around this Dundalk team at the moment, and you're probably the man to speak to. You're reporting on it all the time. Earlier this week, of course, the news broke that Dundalk have received a €50,000 fine off UEFA for what is described as shadow coach, and I'm sure everyone's read up on that by now. And we've got this contract situation that I'm sure you've heard me and Gary discuss week after week after week on this show. But there seems to be an awful lot of reports coming out ahead of this cup final. The likes of Gannon, Gartland, Rogers, Mountney, they're all been linked away. What's the mood in the camp, do you feel, going into this game on Sunday like?
Well, look, it's going to play on people's minds. I mean, like, they're human at the end of the day, and a lot of them, I suppose, you know, certainly the ones that have been there a while, they've sort of grown up. They've gone from, to join the club maybe as boys, and they've become men, like, in terms of, you know, I think a lot of them are fathers now, a lot of them are husbands now. And, you know, as we sit here right now, in a week's time, they're effectively unemployed. Like, they might have offers elsewhere, fair enough. But, I mean, if any of us were a week away from losing our jobs, it would obviously make us a bit antsy. We saw a situation last year, there was obviously far less out of contract last year, but we saw a situation where, I suppose, Pat Hoobin was the one who sort of dominated the headlines last year in terms of, is he going to stay, is he going to go? And, like, he's on record as saying it affected him. Now, I know everyone's different, but it's hardly ideal when, I mean, at one point, I think I counted 18, it's probably slightly less than that now because Joshua Gatt left the club, but 18 players out of contract, if you even take 3-4 of them, that has the same effect that it had on Hoobin. Like, you know, you're losing, you know, very good players, they're not going to give you what they can if they're fully settled and happy. So it is a concern, and you know, it's only natural to be playing on their minds. Obviously, fans are concerned because a lot of these players, they're fan favourites. You talk of Michael Duffy, Sean Gannon, you know, even some of the older guys, Gary Rogers, Brian Gartland, Dane Massey, guys have been there like and won massive amounts at the clubs. Club legends, John Mountney, another one. You know, it's very concerning that, you know, there comes a time, obviously, where every club has to move a player on and they reach maybe the end and they have to look at improving. But there's not even a sort of faith that there's a plan there to better the situation. And that is what is concerning. Through no fault of his own, I suppose, Filippo Giovannoli doesn't know the league. He doesn't even know probably European football in general, because he's been, since 2014, he's primarily been based in New York. So where these other players are going to come to that are better than what's there. Obviously, you need to add one or two, certainly. You know, every squad needs to be improved every year, but I just don't see what the strategy is right now.
Is there any news, James, on the appointment of this director of football or CEO? Jim McGilton, obviously the name that's been touted for weeks now, but it seems to have gone a bit cold, that story, in recent weeks. Maybe they're holding off till after the cup final, perhaps?
Yeah, I'm led to believe Jim McGilton's still happening. Obviously, there's issues there in terms of his a notice to work, and I'd imagine that's why it's sort of gone a bit cold. But you're in a situation also now where you're getting very close to Christmas. Say he has to work a month, I don't know for definite that's what it is, but say it is a month. I mean, you could have players lost by then. I mean, the one that I always come back to is Ronan Finn in 2016, where there was a point where he would have happily probably agreed a deal to stay at Dundalk, and it kind of was let run. And in between, he said he had got an offer from Rovers and he took it. And, you know, in many ways, that was a key sort of starting block to the current Rovers team, because I think Stephen Bradley's on the record as saying Ronan Finn was his most important signing. And you know, he's their captain and leader. And I think he just give them that presence in the dressing room, and other players want to join a club with good players there, and he's definitely one of them.
Yeah, and Gary, it's a good point James makes there about the unrest that it caused an experienced player and a player that would have been in red hot demand last season, Patrick Hooban. So you're looking at maybe some of the lesser known, or they're all well known names at this stage at Dundalk, but some of the players that maybe haven't got as many consistent game minutes, it's got to be playing on their mind where they're going to be playing next season. And if that just takes even 1% of their focus off this cup final, you have to say that's an advantage in the way of Shamrock Rovers.
Yeah, it does. It's certainly something to be considering for the players. Like James, you said it right there. If any of us were looking at no work, you know, tomorrow week, we'd be quite rightly concerned, and I have sympathy for the players. On the other hand, probably what 15 clubs out of the 20 or 19 in the League of Ireland would be in the same boat, re-signing players each season. You know, it hasn't been a very common thing, signing players to multiple year contracts. So like a lot of the players wouldn't, it's not a total foreign idea to them. But at the same time, Kieran, you mentioned it would certainly take 1 or 2% of their focus away from the game. And in my position is that Rovers will win the game on Sunday. So Dundalk could do without this, you know, focus being taken away from that game, because that should be the be-all and end-all for Dundalk in the next few days.
Yeah, you actually make a very good point there, Gary, about the fact, look, this is far from alien to League of Ireland clubs, League of Ireland fans. At most clubs, you're going to see that rotation of players on 12-month contracts. But at Dundalk over the last couple of years, particularly since 2016 when they got that European money, they were offering two-year contracts to the likes of Michael Duffy. They were giving Hobe and longer contracts. And there seemed to be that kind of philosophy going forward now to give players longer term deals. And then if a player did get sold on to the UK or abroad, they were getting a few pounds back and they can invest it back in the squad. So, James, I suppose it's a concern that philosophy already seems to have gone by the wayside. I know, obviously, you have to take the financial impact of COVID-19 into account. But from all reports I've been reading during the week, it looks like the players are only been offered 12-month contracts going forward. So if another club comes in with a 2 or 3 year contract, you've got to think that's more appealing.
Well, I suppose it's a double-edged sword. From what I'm hearing is, 12-month contracts are what is being offered. I can sort of see it from Peak Six's point of view. And I mean, we all talk about football as a passion, and we, as fans, we all just want the best team. From their point of view, they're looking at a league where, you know, as we stand, there's no lead sponsor next season. There's no TV deal for next season. There's no commitment from the government in terms of what support they will give for next season. You know, will there even be a league next year? Like, we all obviously hope so, and we're all planning for that. But, I mean, if we're talking about 36 matches with no, like, I think Leo Varadkar was on TV this week saying he doesn't think there'll be fans at venues by next summer. Now, I think he was talking more from a music point of view, but you know, if we can't get those supporters back into ground, certainly by, you know, even halfway through the season, how are clubs going to survive? And I know people will say, well, Pick Six have plenty of money and all, but it is also a business. They are also investors. And okay, you might go and you might get a 2-year deal at another club, but as we've seen during the last situation, you know, is that really the same if you're not going to be looked after in terms of, like, if there's trouble down the line or we have to stop the leagues again? And none of us want that. Are you still going to be getting that money? Because all the Dundalk players got their money. And I tell you, you know, do you take the risk as well of, right, I might only get a 1-year deal here, but I'll probably be on more money than I will elsewhere. So there's a lot of factors to weigh up, and I appreciate that. But, you know, we sometimes criticise owners when they're, I suppose, reckless with funds. I could sort of see where Peak Six are coming from it when there is such uncertainty around the league as well.
Yeah, very good points, I have to say. But again, I have to agree with Gary. I think there's just a bit of a storm brewing here at the moment with all this stuff going on off the pitch and the fact that their preparation's been disrupted this week. I think you'd have to be leaning heavily towards a Shamrock Rovers win. I know you won't like me saying that, James, but we're actually going to talk Rovers now. But before we do, we're going to hear from a good friend of ours on the podcast. Padjo Flynn joins us on Between the Stripes. Now, we actually had his old teammate, Stephen Rice, on the show last week, and we're going to be joined by another golden oldie now. It's Pat Flynn joining us on Between the Stripes LOI podcast. Padjo, how's life?
Not bad, Ciarán. How's things?
Not too bad at all. Here we are again, Padjo. Cup final, Shamrock Rovers, Dundalk. We've been here. We've seen it before. Are we going to get the same outcome as last year?
I hope so. I hope it's a bit more comfortable. But for me, I know Bowes came second. They are the best two teams. It's probably the final that I'd like to see, especially with no fans there. Next year, I'd like to see Rovers and Bowes. I think it'd be a great spectacle. But this year, I think Dundalk didn't do themselves justice. How they played against Bowes a couple of weeks so shows what they can do.
Yeah.
How they played last night or the other night against Athlone shows what they can do, and how they've done in Europe shows what they can do. So they'll have a point to prove against Rovers this year. But Rovers have been flying. The brand of football they've been playing has been brilliant, and they're getting ugly results as well, as shown in the quarterfinals against Finn Harps as well.
What did you make of that game last night down in Lizzie Wullen? 11-0, record breaking stuff. A couple of people today saying maybe Dundalk should have took the foot off the gas after 6 or 7. What's your own thoughts on that?
I've seen people writing about it on Twitter, things like that, about they should have, you know, as a player you might think about, but these lads, they want to play in the final, they've points to prove, so there's lads coming on at half time, just after half time, they want to get in as well. And like, listen, Dundalk are professional outfit, they're ruthless, they have a job to do, and they're not going to stop for anybody. And to be fair, I wouldn't say any team would stop either. Do you know that way, take the foot off the gas? I don't think that's in the players' mentality there. They're just thinking of goals, can we play well, can we impress my manager, and can we get the team in for next week, the cup final?
Yeah, obviously you're working with young players. How demoralising do you think last night might be for Athlone, particularly their young keeper? You had to feel sorry for him. He was called in on short notice, that the main goalkeeper was unavailable, and you could just see maybe the bit of inexperience cost him. He was unlucky, he made a couple of good saves, and the rebound just fell to the wrong man. It was just one of them nights for him.
Well, that's it. And to be fair, I think if the normal keeper had been there, it would have been a similar scoreline.
Yeah.
I'm not sure like how they bet Shells. Shells must have had a really off day, but these things happen in football. And it was with Longford, we had a really bad result on television. It takes a couple of weeks to pick up. These lads are young, so it will show what it takes. The one thing to get out of it is that's what the standard is. That's what professionalism is. How these lads, like, Brian Garland, live their lives. That's the standard. That's what it has to be. So some of them might take and run with it. Others could crumble. So it'll be interesting to see how they react. But they've probably the best man in charge of them down there. I had to pick them up after that. So we'll have no doubts to be back stronger next year. Because in fairness to Athlone, they're building something. They've become a likeable club again, I think. They were kind of off the radar for a bit this year. They played really good football. They've good young players in there and a good young manager as well. And I think they're going in the right direction, to be honest.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, did you ever play in any game like that? I'm not sure what game you're referencing with Longford. I must have wiped it from my memory bank. So tell us a bit more about that one.
I think I was only back from hip surgery, and it was one of my first games back, and I felt I could do well. It was on telly, and I think it was 5-0 after probably 70 minutes. I'm not sure whether I finished 5-2.
Would that be Matthew's first game down in Cork? Is that the one you're...
It could have been
that one.
So I was only back as well, but it was on television as well, so it was a hard one to take. And I had one at Rovers as well. I think it was 4-5-0. It wasn't as big, but it was Dundalk as well. It was whipped off at half time. It was on television. So they're hard ones to take, but you can either crumble for them or say, this is what it takes. This is what we need to do every week to be a professional footballer. And you either do it or else you could be left behind.
Yeah, at least you had the dodgy hip to blame for the first one. We'll not talk about the Dundalk game, but back to serious matters. I think a lot of people agree this game's going to be won and lost on Sunday in the middle of the park. Jack Byrne ran the show last year. Graham Burke was very good as well in the cup final. McAniff has been excellent ever since he put on the green and white hoops. I have to say I'm a big fan of him. Dundalk were without Chris Shields last year. There's a couple of positions there up for grabs. Will Murray play? Will Sloggett play? McElhenney looked back to his best last night and in the European games recently as well. So how do you see that midfield battle shaping up at the Aviva?
Yeah, it's going to be a good one, especially with Shields back this year. I know he played earlier, and like the two boys, in fairness, Shields and Bourne seem to be the matchup most people look at, but I really like watching Graham Burke. The running he does, the work rate he has, I think it opens up a lot of opportunities for Jack, for Gary O'Neill if he's in there, for Aaron McAniff as well. But like with Shields in there, Sloggett's been doing really well as well in that holding position, I think, as well. And if McElhenney's back to his best as well, it's going to be some game. So it's one that I'm looking forward to seeing. In my opinion, I think if Rovers are at it, they'll win, but you never know. Cup final, John Dundalk have a point to prove from last year as well.
How different is cup final day going to be this year for the players in particular? Obviously, it'll be very different for the spectators. They'll be watching from home. But you were in Michael O'Neill's squad that made it to the 2010 cup final, the first final played in the Aviva when you lost that one penalties to Sligo Rovers. So tell us about maybe the build up to cup finals like that and that day, and how it might be very different this year around.
Well, with us at Rovers, I know it's like I'm biased towards them. It's a special thing for Rovers. When we went that year, we had the white horse out in front. All the fans were in Ringsend. We drove through Ringsend ourselves just to get a sense of it and to build us up. Now, we'd won the league just weeks before that, and I think it was a weight off our shoulder. So we probably didn't take the cup final as seriously as we should have, and we didn't perform, neither did Sligo, in fairness, but they won it. This year, I think it's going to be a lot different with no fans there. I've seen it all over Europe now. Teams that are really dependent on their fans have struggled. Celtic, Liverpool, teams like this. But the one thing, Rovers haven't had their fans there, and they've been playing excellent football. So, and then Dundalk have the advantage of playing in the Aviva already in empty stadiums in Europe. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens. It's going to be different for the players. You won't have that 12th man cheering you on, but it'll be interesting to see what happens.
Actually, it's funny that you raised the point about the white horse. I think that the white horse was out in force last year as well before the cup final. Is that a Rovers tradition for every cup final day?
Yeah, they bring it out every cup final day. I think the year we were there in the final, it was a white pony. You couldn't get a horse in time, so it was a pony. Probably why we lost. But I went in last year before the cup final, having a few drinks in Ringsend, and like there was thousands in the middle of the street, and it was all good humour. There was no trouble or anything like that. Then the march behind the horse, I'm not sure why it is behind a white horse. It's probably a tradition that's been passed on, but there was a real buzz about it, and especially for Rovers who hadn't won the cup in so long, and they got to win it then last year. It was brilliant, one of the best days of my life, and I wasn't involved in the football team, but it was really good.
Yeah, there'll probably be no horse this year, sadly, so maybe that's going to be a lucky charm for Dundalk. I think most people are expecting it to be a tight game, probably, Pat.
It will be, I think. Like Dundalk, they've hit a bit of form the last few weeks. Like the players they have, I was so surprised they were so far off in the league. They'll probably feel it. They probably feel that they didn't do themselves justice this year, because for me, I feel they were a better team than Bowes. For one reason or another, the performances weren't there early on in the season. But the last few weeks they've showed it, so they've been right up there, and Rovers have been consistent every week. That game against Finn Harps a couple of weeks ago, I think the way it was won will ignite the fire in them, and instead of every game being quite easy up to the final, that was a tough one, and it showed they can win ugly as well, which they did. Sligo was a tough game yesterday. So the two teams seem to be peaking again, and going into the final, it's what people want. So hopefully it's a good spectacle for everybody.
Yeah, it's funny actually that I mentioned that 2010 Cup final earlier, because of course Stephen Bradley got sent off in that one. So I suppose he's already rectified that one by winning the cup last year. But this is an opportunity now for Shamrock Rovers to record the first unbeaten double in well over 90 years. And I know critics will say it's not a full season and should be an asterisk next to it and all of that. But from a Rovers point of view, I said on this show a couple of weeks ago, personally, I'd be very disappointed now if they didn't win the double, because I think that's a really, really strong and special group of players there who will probably go on to achieve great things over the next couple of years. So I fully expected them a few weeks ago to win this double, and they're just 90 minutes away now.
Yeah, in fairness, every game they've backed it up, they've come in and they've won them. I think if they perform, they'll win it. I know Stephen Bradley is suspended for that. I got sent off in the Aviva in 2010. He suspended for the Aviva final, I think, anyway.
Yeah.
But Rovers are a well prepared team, and I don't think you have to do much coaching when your team are that well prepared. And they have big characters on the bench there already, Glenn and Steve McPhail, and they wouldn't be yes men to Steve. They'd have their own opinions as well, I'm sure. And Stephen will have a plan laid out for the players, so it'd be great to see. And listen, Stephen fucking made himself a god nearly last year by winning the cup. To some great photos of it, and like that team, what they achieved, in my opinion, they're a better footballing team than the team we had that won the league. So it'd be great for them to go and do the double, and in my opinion, they deserve it as well.
Yeah, well, we'll see on Sunday. It's going to be very, very interesting indeed. Unfortunately, no spectators. But just before I let you go, I suppose, just to raise that point there, Stephen Bradley is suspended from the touchline. But I was speaking to Shane Keegan earlier on for the show here, and we were speaking about him being on the sideline in Europe because Filippo Giovannoli has been suspended by UEFA, and he said it really doesn't make an awful lot of difference. A lot of the work is done before they go out on the pitch. Would you agree it's probably not going to have any huge impact or an impact at all on Sunday's final?
I wouldn't say so. The players are well drilled. Even the last couple of games, Stephen hasn't been there either. Glenn's looked after, but all the work will be done. The teams have faced each other a good few times this year. They'll know each other inside out. So, listen, it's going to be a great spectacle for whatever team. I hope Rovers win it, but it's going to be a good game, would imagine.
Yeah, and look, finally, do you think Rovers as well might have, if there is an advantage to be found somewhere, it's perhaps in the build-up? Dundalk have a very crazy week ahead. We heard from Shane Keegan, he said that they'll only get really one training session in before this cup final. Could that have the biggest impact of anything?
You'd imagine it might. We're now Dundalk, I think they're only getting back on Thursday. Rovers have the full week, but listen, it's a cup final, it's a one-off game. You spill your guts for you, drop every ounce of energy you have. The Dundalk players, they're well set up, but in my opinion, I think he's going to rest a few players for the Mold game, but his interviews after at Lone, winning a cup's priority for him. It'd be great for Dundalk fans to win a cup. It'll set them up nice next year, but I hope it doesn't happen.
Pat, been brilliant speaking to you. Thanks very much for your time.
Nice talking to you again, Kieran. Thanks.
Between the Stripes LOI podcast is proudly sponsored by BarwinRacing.com. Check out our website for weekly League of Ireland previews, enhanced offers and double the odds first goal score matches, among other incentives, with a €30 free bet available to new customers. T's and C's apply. Barwon Racing, nobody does League of Ireland better.
Yeah, great to hear from Pat Flynn here on Between the Stripes LOI podcast. Gary, he's very much in agreement with you. He's very positive for Rovers' chances on Sunday. Look, let's talk a little bit more about the game now. From a Shamrock Rovers team news point of view, Aaron Green is an injury doubt, but I was reading quotes there from Stephen Bradley, and he's very hopeful he'll play, James. Again, if they play three at the back, a man like Green, he's not a physical presence, but he can run in between them channels. And as you said, there might be a bit of confusion over who's picking him up. He's not the type of player you'd like to play against if he is 100% fit.
No, he's just one of them. He's full of energy and, very quick, particularly over the the first couple of yards. So yeah, he's a player who's caused Dundalk problems in over the years, and I think even last year he won the penalty that McInniff scored, which looked like it would be the winner. You'd rather have him, I suppose, if you're Rovers than not, and he certainly just gives them that something a bit different. He's a real workhorse, and again, a very versatile player if you needed that. Even, you know, say it's 1-0 with 10 minutes to go and you need to sort of switch things up a bit to defend a lead or something, he's a cracking player.
Yeah, he's definitely proven myself and John Breyer wrong. We were questioning whether he was the man to lead Rovers this season, but he's been absolutely excellent. As you said, he gives them a little bit of everything. But I was reading reports that they're still maybe considering trying to bolster their strike force next season.
Yeah, I can see the logic in it. For as good a year as it's been for Shamrock Rovers, I think most of their goals have been spread around the team, which, don't get me wrong, is great. But I think it's very hard to keep that sort of consistency up from midfield. You know, we've seen the likes of Byrne and McInniff and these sort of players, you know, score absolute screamers at times this season. But, you know, you want your guys scoring the tap-ins as well. And I think they've probably lacked that. Like Rory Gaffney came in and you know, I know he's had his injury problems. It just hasn't happened the way they maybe would have hoped. And I think if they can add, you know, a 20 goal striker to that team, they'll take some stopping next year.
Yeah, but I suppose everyone's looking for one of those. Gary, this Rovers team, they've rightfully got a lot of plaudits this season. Sometimes it's a little bit over the top from some pundits, I have to say. This Rovers team clearly has the potential to go on to be a great, great, one of the best potentially League of Ireland teams. But look, they've won a title. You can say it was 18 games. They won it. They were the best team. They might win the double. If they do that, it's the start of something special. They need to go on and win 3 or 4 league titles in succession, progress in Europe, and then we'll have a conversation about where they stack up against the great League of Ireland teams of the past. But looking at this Rovers team ahead of Sunday, can you pick out any weaknesses Dundalk might be able to exploit?
Jesus, none come to mind. Probably, like, I know you're after talking about Aaron Green there. You know, you're talking about the next season and looking to improve the strike force. Aaron Green will be a thorn in Dundalk's side, all right. But I'm not sure would he be able to actually. I don't think he'll score on Sunday.
I think you're taking a chance there.
I probably am, but I don't really see it. I think
he might not score, but it could be a replica of last year. He very much could be involved in the crucial goal, because as James said, he'll run the legs off the defenders, and that's where, if you did have that 10-15 man goal in reserve on the bench, let Green run the legs off, you know, all due respect, older defenders like Brian Gartland. And then,
well, you don't need Aaron Green to run the legs off Ryan Gartland. Any player would probably do that.
But yeah, that's where then a striker comes off the bench and they pick the little gaps that have been exposed. So that's definitely one area they could improve. But do they have enough? Do they have enough quality to go and win this double on Sunday? I certainly think they do.
Oh, without a doubt. I think Aaron Green, I don't think it's going to be the major concern. It's going to be the three boys in midfield coming in, Byrne, Burke, and McInniff. So I think that's where the real firepower and problems are going to be caused for Dundalk. So it's going to, as I said earlier, a huge performance from Chris Shields in particular, and he will make a good difference to Dundalk on Sunday. But them three boys have been having had a great season, and as you said, we could be looking at the start of a huge few years for Shamrock Rovers. In the past, poor old Stephen Bradley, you know, this is probably his 40th cup final now at this point. It has clicked, regardless of COVID and 18-game season and all of that. It has worked, unbeaten season, regardless of the shortened year. And starting off with a double will be just huge. And I think they'll just have too much for Dundalk come Sunday.
James, could this be a very different cup final to other years? Aside from, obviously, it is a very different cup final. There's no supporters in the ground, but what I mean is from the way Dundalk might approach this game, usually it was Dundalk going in, aside from last year's game against Rovers, Rovers probably did shade the best football in moments in that game and probably deserved to win the cup. But in the games against Cork in the four other previous cup finals, Dundalk were the team going in expected to have all of the possession. You were looking at Cork maybe setting up and picking their moments on the break and from set pieces. What might we actually see that from Dundalk? Because that's how they played in the first half against Malta tonight. They, obviously, it's a much more superior opponent than to Shamrock Rovers, with all due respect. But might we see them set up and try and draw the likes of Byrne and Burke onto them and then hit them on the break?
Yeah, I think that's what they've done very well in, you know, in, I suppose you're probably going back to 2019 now, where I suppose, you know, they did a couple of big wins against them, most notably the 3-2 in Oriel that clinched the title. I think everyone just wants a good game. I mean, we all remember fondly the 3-2 in Tala at the start of the year when there was fans there. Like, that was just a cracking atmosphere. Like, obviously there was a winner on the day and a loser, but
feels like years ago now, I have to say.
really does. But yeah, I'm just looking forward to it because, look, Rovers were the better team last year, no doubt about it. But Chris Shields was missing, as you mentioned. Patrick Barcalini was also missing. And I think, you know, he could be a massive player, I think, for Dundalk at the weekend.
He's just showing signs of getting back to his best now, isn't he? If he can just stay fit.
Yeah, like, I mean, I spoke to him down in Athlone after the game and he was sensational that night now, and I know it was Athlone, but he was just so happy after the game from the point of view that he says, I actually feel good for the first time in a while. And he wasn't talking about his performance, just where he is in terms of, I think, at times this season I've looked at him and he was sort of playing in second gear because I think he was afraid if he tried to move up the gear, he was going to re-injure himself.
Yeah.
And I think even tonight he came on and there was a bit of moment of quality where I think he put John Mountney away late on in the game. And again, the Rapid Vienna game. So he's just shown, and that's something I think where Dundalk might have the advantage slightly, is that a few of their players are sort of peaking. Even David McMillan, when he came back to the club, a few of his games, and he'll admit this himself, were below par of what we expect of him. But I think in recent weeks, he's sort of got back to the sort of McMillan of old, probably just a run of games more than anything. And, you know, Dundalk have been sort of still competing at a fairly high level. I know they haven't been winning every week, but, you know, Dundalk have also experienced where Rovers have been, and that you win a league title and, you know, the sort of competitiveness does go out of it. Now, I know they kept winning right up until the end, but it's not really the same. Like, even looking at their semi-final against Sligo, they probably never really got out of second gear. And that was enough, don't get me wrong, to beat Sligo. But, you know, you're going to have to go through the gears, I think, to win this final on Sunday. And it can be hard to turn that on because, as I say, Dundalk have experienced that where they've had really successful league seasons in previous years. And then the league sort of ends, even though there's still matches to play, and sort of getting back after sort of taking a foot off the gas can be troublesome.
Yeah, I can hear the Harps fans shouting at the radio or whatever they're listening to the podcast on. Rovers can turn it on when they want, James, because we've seen that in the second half when they were under the cosh against Harps. Two goals down, they came back and won it 3-2. I know there was a lot of controversy about the game, but there's just, you don't know where this Rovers team is going to hit you from. They've got danger all over the park. But Gary, again, just looking towards maybe how Dundalk might set up, that counter-attacking system, it could be ideal for them. Particularly, you've got players off the bench there. Maybe Kelly doesn't start. Maybe Adua doesn't start. Very, very pacey players who could get in behind that Shamrock Rovers back four late on if needed.
Yeah, there's certainly a case with them both playing tonight that there'd be an opportunity for them in the second half to come on and get at the back four of Shamrock Rovers. I think they will have to play a more defensive game, and it's going to be probably a similar setup to how they started the game tonight against Molde. I thought that watching that game tonight, not to go away from the cup final, I thought there was no real plan of getting when they did pick up possession tonight to get it to a player up front. It was a lot of hoofing and a lot of launching, which all I could see, or that was all I could see in the first half, with a couple of balls being picked up by Kelly and Adua. So they'll have to, if that's the way that they're going to set up on Sunday, they're going to have to be far more effective at the difference working the ball out.
The difference there, though, will be you most likely will have McMillan, a real target man. We mentioned somebody like McElhenney might start in the 10 there and pick up the loose stuff off him. So I think it'll be a very, very different approach on Sunday to what we've seen in the first half tonight.
It certainly will, and it'll have to be. But at the same, like, still at the same time, it was like last ditch stuff 15 minutes into the game tonight. So it was boot it. And that just won't, you know, this is a cup final, that just won't wash on Sunday, and Shamrock Rovers will be just, they'll be able to pick that off. So there will be, it'll be a similar plan, but it will require a good bit of change in how they work the ball from defence and they pick it up to McMillan and McElhenney.
Interesting stuff. And this is where it gets interesting on the show now, lads, because we're going to move on to our weekly charity bet sponsored by bar1racing.com. They give us a €10 free bet to spend on the show each and every week, and this is our last bet of the season, so we really need a bit of luck. We have passed the we're up to about £113 now in the kitty. Gary, you had a winner last week. That was Dundalk -1 against Athlone, which I couldn't believe was 1-2. That was free money. And you had Shamrock Rovers to win against Sligo. So well done there. And I still have my fiver on Rovers to win the cup as well. So that bet is still in play for the weekend. But I'll head over to James first. I don't know if you prepared anything. I think I've actually just sprung this on you as a surprise. So maybe you'll come up with something a bit more creative here, James.
So what's my option? Just anything, just a first goal scorer or something?
Anything you like.
Do you know what? I'm going to back Dave McMillan anytime. I just think, I was chatting to him again last week, and, you know, all the goals he scored, big goals for Dundalk, he's never actually scored in the Aviva Stadium. And I think, you know, while Dundalk would have obviously loved to have Patrick Hooban involved, he's out injured, obviously. I think McMillan gives you something different, and I think back to like the likes of the EA Sports Cup final in 2017. I know it's a long time ago, but he was outstanding that day. He gives you a different problem, and you know, I know the Rovers team has evolved since then, but he was still up against the likes of, you know, Pico Lopez that day, and you know, he scored early on, and Dundalk won fairly comfortably 3-0 in the end. I'm not saying it's going to be like that at the weekend, but I just fancy McMillan to nab one at some stage.
Gary, over to yourself.
I'm going to go with McAniff to score a penalty.
Right, I'll have to see. That's a complicated one. I'm sure we can get odds priced up on that.
A complicated one. make the call, Berko. Get it sorted.
I'll get on to the traders, but I think you're looking at about 6-1, if I'm not wrong, on McMillan first goal score. So that'd be a nice few pounds. And as I said, we've still got that fiver on Rovers to win the cup as well. So look, before we go this evening, we're going to hear from one more guest, a man who knows what it's about winning an FAI Cup. John Flanagan was part of that Dundalk team in 2002 that won the cup, but of course they were relegated at the end of last season. So he had some very, very interesting things to say to us earlier on ahead of Sunday's cup final. Now, I'm delighted to say we're going to hear from an FAI Cup winner on the show now. I'm delighted to be joined by John Flanagan, who, of course, won the FAI Cup with Dundalk FC back in 2002. And Dundalk, as we know, in another cup final, their sixth in a row this Sunday as they take on the holders, Shamrock Rovers. John, are you looking forward to the game?
Yeah, buzzing. Should be another great occasion, as we said. The two teams tied, even though they didn't finish league place in Moyes, probably the two best teams in the country at the moment, yet again in the cup final.
Yeah, I suppose we'll go back to 12 months ago. Rovers won the final on penalties. I think most people will agree it probably wasn't the best game of football, but in the general play that day, I think Jack Byrne, without Chris Shields on the pitch, he ran riot a little bit, Byrne, and Rovers probably did just deserve to nick it that day, although Dundalk had their chances to lift the cup too. Are we likely to see a similar pattern on Sunday? Will it be a cagey affair again?
Yeah, well, I suppose just come back to last year's one, it was a bit of a drab spectacle. I mean, it's been at the game, and we expected fireworks, and it didn't really happen. I think Jack Byrne, he bossed the game, in fairness. So, man, I felt the whole Rovers midfield bossed the game last year. I think, yet again, this final on Sunday, it's going to come down to the midfield, and I'd be wary, shall we say, from a dog point of view, that Rovers look so strong in that department all year, so the dog will really have to lift it now on Sunday to try and counteract that.
Yeah, of course, Shields will be there this time around, though, and he's been an absolutely phenomenal form. He's probably playing his best football in the last couple of weeks, particularly in those European games, so that's obviously a big advantage this time around.
in fairness, if there's anybody capable of stamping their authority in the game and putting shackles on Jack, it's probably Chris Shields. He's been phenomenal all season. And as you said, the last number of weeks, he seems to have stepped it up a gear again, and he's got that bit of bite, bit of tenacity back into the Dundalk midfield, and it's going to be interesting to watch whether they can contain them and then go and try to implement their own game plan going forward.
Yeah, and I'm sure you watched the game last night. A record-breaking occasion as Dundalk put 11 past Athlone Town, and I have to say I was very surprised to see some very small minority, I must say, but there was some reaction on social media after a lot of people saying they thought it was a disrespectful thing for Dundalk to keep pushing so hard into the last couple of minutes and racking up a score like that. Look, it's a professional game of football. It's an FAI Cup semi-final. You have to be ruthless. You have to be cutthroat. And there's players playing for cup final places, European places, contracts there. It was an ultra-professional performance from Dundalk.
Yeah, I mean, I watched it. I kept turning it off and kept going back onto it because he said it was so lopsided. But from the dog point of view, it's their profession. This is the way they're training week in, week out. They put the dog down. You've got to keep your hand on his shoulder. Give the likes of Athlone their credit. I mean, they're down and they tried. They were just outclassed on the day. And as you said, everyone even coming off the bench, Sean Murray, Dan Kelly, oh, these are pushing for start places on Sunday and in big European games. There's a lot of lads out of contract. So the result was never in doubt, but there was more than the result at stake, I think, last night. There was lads trying to lay down the marker for the marquee occasion on Sunday.
Yeah, look, at the same people that were criticising Dundalk last night, that they failed to mention the fact that the minute the full-time whistle went, Gary Rogers was straight over to the young Athlone goalkeeper. He was giving him a bit of, you know, keep the chin up, and Filippo Giovinoli as well was very, did the same, went straight over to the young goalie as well and had a word with him. So that was a touch of class from the two lads as well. But look, you're always going to get that bit of crying on social media, I suppose. It's been a very strange year at Dundalk, John. Obviously, you do a bit of work for the local radio as well, so you cover it quite closely. And we haven't even touched on your playing career with Dundalk yet. Has it been one of the maddest years you can remember at Dundalk Football Club? And there's been some mad ones in the past, we have to say.
It's been very roller coaster, shall we say. I mean, we're coming on the back of an era that's unprecedented success, and I think with that brings demands on players and then expectations in the tent. They expect to go out and win everything all the time, and they weren't really allowing for a transition period. I mean, Vinny came in last year. He was in 4 weeks into the, and they wanted him gone because things weren't going right. He turned it around and almost won everything last year.
Yeah.
Then he wasn't given too much time this year again, and they brought Giovanni in from nowhere, really, and was still a very topsy-turvy state of affairs up at the club at the minute. And I don't know, there's so many players out of contract at the moment, and even the fact that the management team aren't tied down, even though there's supposedly promises there that they will be there, it just doesn't seem to be a stable setup at all at the minute, and I'd be worried enough going forward, because if things aren't nailed down, you've got an awful lot of players like Duffy and Gannon, and they'd be snapped up here if not abroad, and I'd just be worried that if things aren't nailed down very, very quickly, that this period of dominance and success could be coming to an end fairly quickly.
Yeah, look, that's a topic we've been discussing on the show week after week here. I suppose some of the stuff going on behind the scenes and the out of contract players, and myself and my co-host kind of have very, very different views on it. My co-host Gary, for anyone that's listening, knows that he feels Dundalk are still in a very, very strong position. As he puts it, Dundalk are there. They can offer the money if they want to keep these lads. But I suppose Dundalk fans aren't used to this. It's been a very stable setup for the last number of years, particularly under Stephen Kenny. He was a manager that organised almost everything, every element of the club, and you probably would have never had this situation arise where you have so many players out of contract. So you can understand why there is that fear there from Dundalk fans, and even you said so yourself there, you're a little bit worried even though you're going into a cup final this weekend.
Yeah, and Stephen was excellent, but since the Americans have taken over, and don't get me wrong, the money's great, but as we've seen across numerous leagues, just waving money at people isn't a be-all and end-all. I mean, Stephen came in and he laid the foundation there without spending the big money. He signed a specific type of player. You know, players with a point to prove, players with a hunger and a desire. And I think just going out and trying to get players and giving them big money coming over from Scotland or England or America, it doesn't work. I said on the radio the last couple of weeks, the dog have to look at their recruitment policy, and I think it's a type of player that they need to get back into the club rather than a specific profile, shall we say, price range of player. They need to get lads in who are going to work and fit the system that they have. And that's my own opinion, that Stephen laid the foundations there without spending much money. And now we've just got to try and replicate what he did.
Yeah, I suppose you're probably a good man to ask on the current situation in regards to recruitment, because it's been reported at the moment that obviously that Jim Magilton is going to come in maybe a director of football or a CEO type role, and he's going to play a large role in recruiting players. Obviously, he worked in the league with Shamrock Rovers as an assistant, but he's been working for the IFA more recently. It remains to be seen how close of an eye he has been keeping on League of Ireland. Is there a concern that maybe there's a lack of knowledge there for recruiting players next year?
I suppose it is always a fear that a lot of the recruitment could be based outside of the league. And I mean, we want to keep the best talent here in the country and playing for the best clubs. But I know from talking to Stephen McDonald, who's working with Jim Magilton up in the IFA, that he'd hold him in huge esteem. And he's an excellent coach, and he's supposed to be an excellent man for trying to develop talent. But I think Dundalk definitely needs someone behind the scenes that know football. And Jim Magilton, he is a football man. I said the two lads come in from America, and they don't know the league. They don't know any parts of the league. So they definitely need someone. Now, whether Jim is the right man or not, that remains to be seen. But whether the two boys are the right man or not, that's another question as well. But I think they need somebody in there to steady the ship and have a policy in place, and don't be going outside of that policy just to sign a certain player who that maybe just costs a lot of money, comes with a reputation, but maybe he's not going to do it in the league.
Yeah, and look, I spoke to Shane Keegan earlier on for the show, and it's a really hectic schedule this week. The lads are in getting COVID tested today. They fly to Norway tomorrow. They're essentially on lockdown then all day Wednesday. The game is on Thursday, and then obviously fly back, and they'll only really get one session in before the cup final. So it's not the ideal preparation at all. And then obviously the Arsenal game down the road as well. You know, it's going to test the squad to its limit, but there is a big squad there. Do you think there'll be a lot of rotation Thursday? Would you be happy to see Dundalk maybe put that Molde game aside and focus on picking up this FAI Cup now?
Yeah, it's a tough one. Because myself and Adrian, the radio, we talk with us every week. And if you think of the prize money on offer in Europe, it dwarfs what they're going to achieve with the FAI Cup. I know you have a trophy. Yeah, they have a small prize money, but if they get a draw on Thursday night away, and it's like winning the league 2 or 3 years in a row in terms of prize money. So it's a tough one. I think we'll see the usual. I think he'll go half and half, that he'll probably pick a strong 7 or 8 players with a few maybe people thrown in to save a couple of bodies and then rotate in the second half. They're at the stage that they're all important games, that they want to go out and win them all. And I mean, they are professional players at the end of the day, in terms of they can come home Fridays and recover nice light training session on Saturday and hit the ground. They won't have too much work to do for Rovers, as they know them inside out. They know how Rovers play. They've played them enough. It's just, I think, at this stage, a matter of Dundalk hammering home their own personality on the field and how they want to approach games.
Yeah, look, I said it on last week's show a little bit tongue-in-cheek, but I suppose the supporters' view and the people running football clubs, their view on that game Thursday will be very different. I suppose the people running the club will look at the financial rewards, whereas fans want that silverware and they want something to celebrate. As I said, you can't drive through Dundalk Town waving a paycheck out the window. You can certainly wave the FAI Cup out the window of the car or whatever it may be. So I think from the supporters' point of view, they'd really love to rectify the wrong of last year as well and missing out on that treble by taking the cup off Rovers.
Yeah, I mean it's always been held in such high esteem in the town, the cup, and it's such a wonderful history here that they do. They'd love it, but it's not the only, shall we say, goal for the club. The club itself, I'm talking behind the scenes, they're trying to set up, I suppose, policies and procedures in place to keep the club going a certain direction for the next 5, 10, 15 years. And that costs a lot of money to keep them where they are. So it's a really balancing act. But as you mentioned already, I mean, they have an awful lot of very, very good, established, experienced players. So regardless of nearly who they put in, you're kind of going, but they're probably as good as any other team in the country to be maybe take Rovers out of it.
You're
maybe going to play Sean Murray and Dan Kelly. If you're going to rotate and they start on Thursday, would they probably get into any other team in the country? Probably more than likely.
And look, just your own relationship with the FAI Cup, you touched on it there, how special it is to the people of Dundalk, but you won it in 2002. I was actually reading an old interview with yourself this morning when you spoke about bringing the cup back to the town and 10 or 12,000 people out on the street celebrating. And look, obviously that won't be the case this year, unfortunately, but hopefully if restrictions are eased in around Christmas, maybe the club can do something to mark it. I know when Longford won promotion a couple of weeks ago, they had a bit of a drive-through parade through the town, so maybe that's something Dundalk could do if they are lucky enough to win this cup on Sunday. But just tell us your own memories of that 2002 homecoming, I suppose.
Yeah, so, I mean, it really started for us on the way up to Talca Park that day. That we were driving down in and it was just black and white everywhere. I mean, we played a lot, Bows were only up the road and we were outnumbering them 2-1 fans-wise. And then to get the win and come home, it was, to be honest, it's something that never leave. You drive into Dundalk and the footpaths were just packed the whole way in. There was thousands and thousands of people out, and it was just a magical experience. It is something that you'll never forget. It's one of those things that football and sport can only give you.
Yeah, of course, sadly, that year it did end in relegation for Dundalk. It's a very different club to the one you played for now, isn't it? The transformation's been remarkable.
Yeah. That was a crazy 2 weeks. And I mean, we were down in the doldrums, we say, the first division for years. And it was only 2008 that we got back up. And even after I finished down in Kildare that year, they were kind of on the cusp of going out of business 18 months later, 2 years later. And those bucket collections to try and keep the club afloat. A friend of mine, Darius Kearns, was managing them, and they stayed up. And then, in fairness, it's just gone from strength to strength. And to be honest, you look back, and the only thing that really changed was bringing Stephen in. Stephen came in and he revamped the whole place. And as you said, signed a lot of players then that were maybe not making it somewhere or were in a reserve team and not getting the crack of the whip. They all had the points proven. They all paid them back tenfold. And they haven't looked back.
Yeah, I think 2013 is the last time Dundalk didn't, or that's the first trophy they won, and they've won at least one trophy every year. And you mentioned earlier they almost won absolutely everything last year. So a chance to keep that winning sequence going on Sunday. Before we let you go, John, give us your prediction for the game.
My head's telling me Rovers are going to nick it, but obviously my heart's going to say Dundalk. So I'm going to go Dundalk to win 2-1.
Excellent stuff. John, wherever you're watching the game from on Sunday, enjoy it, and thanks very much for speaking to us.
I'll be in the stand. Can't wait.
Very lucky man indeed. Thanks for speaking to us, John.
Thanks a million. No worries. Thanks a million.
Yeah, great to hear from Dundalk legend John Flanagan on Between the Stripes LOI podcast. And thanks to our three guests today, Shane Keegan, Pat Flynn and John, for joining us on the show. Lads, I just realised actually I haven't asked you for your predictions. Gary, I know you're predicting Rovers to win the cup, but do you think that'll be 90 minutes, extra time, penalties? What way are you going?
I think it will be in normal time. As I said in my charity bet, I think McAniff will score a penalty. I think some lad will upend. Probably Jack Byrne or Graham Burke, and make a hames of it. And look, if I got bet on that, I'd probably go Chris Shields now to upend one of them, nail some of them in the box. But I think it'll be done in extra, in normal time, and I think it'll be 1-2 to Shamrock Rovers.
You no need to watch this cup final at all. You've got your mystic ball out there. You know
absolutely.
Exactly what's going to happen.
I can just see it in my mind's eye. I just feel I can see Shields with the hands on the head, the whole lot. Magic.
I'm not sure James will agree that. James, what were you thinking for Sunday?
Look, the form is with Rovers, but I just have a sneaky, and I know it's a bit of heart ruling head here, but I just have a sneaky feeling for Dundalk. I just think, you know, it's been such a up and down year for them, and you know, there's players in that dressing room who've probably not had criticism like they've had this year, and I just think this is their chance. I just think they'll really want it in terms of, you know, they never really got that crack at Rovers in the league. He obviously played a sort of understrength side with the Europa League qualifier was on the horizon, and I just think that, you know, they'll want to end the year on a high. And I know, listen, the incentives there for Rovers as well, but you know, sometimes this dressing room, I think they can pull. They've shown at times this season when the chips are down and they can rally together and get a performance. And I think we'll see it on Sunday. I'm hopeful anyway.
Yeah, I'm leaning towards Rovers in the 90 minutes, but traditionally these cup finals are always very tight. So I think if I'm going to play it safe there, I'm going to go Rovers for an extra time win. Look, lads, it's been an absolute pleasure speaking to you tonight. We're approaching midnight here, so I really appreciate you staying up late to have a chat with us about the cup final. Before we go, though, just a little bit of transfer news. I suppose there's been some wheeling and dealing over the week. And tonight it's been announced on Twitter by Samuel Bowen that he is leaving Waterford. And Gary, I know you caught his statement. Not all right at Waterford, it seems.
No, it certainly appears that way. There was a couple of bits of jibber-jabber online during the week and it didn't really pass much remarks on it, to be honest. But, yeah, Sam Bowen, kind of, he was quiet. He was quiet enough and reserved in his piece on Twitter that he had. So, but he does start his little piece of while I have to say, and this is a quote, while I have to say professional, I am leaving a club with an incredibly sour taste in my mouth, which isn't a great way to start a statement saying goodbye to a club that he's played with. But look, I'm sure it'll all of these things come out in the wash when other players are impacted by it. So, it's not something you want to see. On a pure personal note with Longford Town, it's good to have a club in
in a bit of disarray,
as they say. So it'll be, you know, we could be looking at Waterford next year as a place to pick up points.
Yeah,
but we'll be doing that at all grounds next year. No, mark my words.
Oriel included. James, but sadly, it's become a bit of an annual fixture now at Waterford, hasn't it? These constant rumours in the background, Lee Power's commitment to the club and all the rest. It can't be healthy for the club and the people around it.
No, and it's probably slightly similar to what's happening to Dock at the minute. I think when you've an owner not from the area, there's always that bit of a disconnect. And I'm sure if you spoke to Lee Power, he probably says he has some plan. But when people on the ground don't know what it is, I think it's always concerning. And people don't like uncertainty in general. It's a pity because it's a great place to go, great place to play, good club, some lovely people involved with the setup down there. But yeah, it's just become a bit of a basket case in terms of you don't know what they're trying to achieve. Like, they, you know, this is a club that went into the final day and could have got Europe. And now,
just appears from the outside that they seem to be putting all their eggs into Europe year after year.
Yeah, and that's fine, but you need to back it up. I mean, listen, it was only a short season. I don't know much you can read into it from anyone's point of view, but like, they were 90 minutes away from it. They had some good results this year. Like, the, you know, I was in the RSC myself when they beat Dundalk and deservedly so. They should have beat the Manorial as well. And I just don't think like they were that far away at one point. Like, you know, they've a lot of experience there with the Murphys, and you know, they did some good young talents. I like the look of Smith and a few others this season, but I mean, you need to build on that. If you look at what most clubs are doing at the minute, they're tying down the guys who've sort of been successful with them. Like, so Longford today is re-signing, you know, a few of the guys that got them there. Drogheda have done it very well as well, I think, in terms of, you know, tying down the guys who've got them to the Premier Division and then looking to supplement it. But I mean, if you're not even doing that, it is concerning.
Yeah, as you mentioned, Longford in the headlines over the last 24 hours or so. Last night, the first re-signing was announced, and that was the man that scored the promotion-winning goal, Rob Manley. Great to have him back for next season. Looking forward to seeing him playing Premier Division football in what's only his third season in the League of Ireland, has to be remembered. It's been a very, very quick rise to fame for Rob Manley. And earlier today, Sam Verdon, Shane Elworthy and Carl Chambers all putting pen to paper on new deals with the town. You mentioned Drogheda there. They've made, I think, 13 or 14 re-signings from their promotion winning side. But Dara Markey, the first new addition, James, quite a catch, you'd have to say.
Yeah, he's a talented player. He probably slightly hasn't fulfilled it, but I think He's the type of player playing at United Park might suit him. It's a tight, compact venue, and he's quick feet, and you know, I think he could thrive there. You know, I kind of like what Tim Clancy's done in recent years, and again, I wouldn't have seen as much as the first division maybe as you guys, but I was always very impressed by Drogheda when I did see them, and likewise Longford, and I think it's fitting that they're the two clubs come up, because they were always the ones that kind of stood out for me that, you know, could make that step up, and I'd be interested to see how they get on next year.
Yeah, when we spoke to Tim after the day after they got promoted here on the show, he very much spoke about the fact that he's not just looking to bring in good players. They have to be the right characters. And I think you've touched on it there. Darren Markey just seems to be the right kind of profile to bring into that group there. A young player with a bit of scope for improvement. Gary, elsewhere, a club there's been a lot of talk about, as well as temperament and the right players and the right characters over the last while, has been Shelburne. And they've started their rebuild for next season. Obviously, they'll be trying to get back into the Premier. They've signed JJ Lunny today and Michael Barker as well. So, is that maybe a hint towards a shift in how they've been doing things? Obviously, a lot of experienced players on the books there over the last two seasons.
Yeah, it's going to be a transition for them, even though they're keeping, you know, Morris looks to be staying on. So
we should mention, of course, Alan Reynolds has gone in as assistant as well during the week.
Aye, there was, and they were opening up a war chest earlier on in the week by some accounts, which was rightly put down, but. They're trying to, I don't know, refresh it. Like, you can't keep a squad of players that were relegated, even in the way that they were relegated. They really stumbled into it. There was no real fight or desire or burn to stay up. So you want to get rid of the players that you had looked and go, right, we could do without this fella. He was a bit of a toxic fella around the place, or whoever that is. And that's not saying if you're not re-signed by Shells, that's what happened. But there's going to be a case of, well, we can't keep the same team that got relegated either. They're not the right characters. They're not the right people. So we need to move you on or not re-sign you. So that's what's going to happen. It'd be nice to, or not nice, Shelburne are a distant memory for me now. But they seem to be trying to do a good refresh within the team, and the likes of JJ Lunny and stuff, and Barker will do a good job there.
Yeah, look, of course it is silly season. I had to laugh. I was looking at something there the other day. Daniel O'Reilly been linked with Longford and Finn Harps. I haven't read that anywhere. This was the first I heard of it. And it wasn't in like a national newspaper ending. It was just on a YouTube channel. So it's amazing how these rumours do take legs, you know. Look, the final one I'll point out, I suppose there's been loads of deals over the last week, but one that caught my eye, James, Ed McGinty signing a new 2-year deal with Sligo. Again, that's the sort of long-term planning you can afford to do when you've got European football on the horizon.
Yeah, they've done some good business there, Sligo. As you say, obviously Europe helps, but McGinty obviously highly rated. I think that John Mahon turned tied down as well. So you know, there's the backbone of your team for the next decade, if you want it, you know. And obviously Liam can go out now and maybe strengthen further. You know, always had a good eye for a player, and it gives them a real opportunity to kick on. I think Europe this year was probably more important than maybe any other year, just because of every club's obviously going to suffer from COVID and, you know, the knock-on effect that has. Because I think, certainly from looking in from the outside, you know, at the league in general, I think it's harder to keep that interest going when you're not able to go every week. And that's going to be the challenge for clubs, to sort of retain that if and when they get back fully.
Lads, we'll leave it there for tonight. Thanks very much for speaking to me, folks. We'll be back again next week to look back on the results of the Cup Final, and that'll be our final regular show for this season, and we'll have our Christmas special coming up as well. So the best way as ever to keep in touch with us is through social media. We're on Twitter at Between Stripes. You'll find Between the Stripes on Facebook and Instagram as well, and make sure you subscribe to the show, and if you'd be kind enough to leave a review, that would be greatly appreciated. James and Gary, thanks very much, and we'll speak to you again next week, folks.